This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we delve into those difficult moments with some well-known guests. I'm Giles Pay-Phillips and with me is Jim Daly. How are you, Jim?
I'm not too bad. Yes, I'm okay.
You've woken from your slumber.
I had a little nap this afternoon, yes. So I've sort of woken half awake, half asleep in that weird post-sleep feeling that you get. But I'm doing okay. You know, it's cold but sunny here today as the new year sort of rumbles on. And with that new year and that sunshine, I'm trying to feel positivity at the moment. So,
yes, yeah, nice to see a bit of sunshine, isn't it? It's been so, I don't know about where you are, but it's been absolutely sodden with rain. Like every day, just, you know, and I'm not like against a bit of rain, but it's the sort of relentlessness of it and not being able to go out. You know, obviously we can't go out very much at the moment anyway, but not being able to sort of go out at all because it's just so damp and wet. We've been sort of having to really wrap up and put our all weather gear on to go out. So it's nice to see a bit of sunshine.
Yes, I mean, exactly the same here. Exactly the same here. But trying to stay sort of positive about that. That spring, not too far around the corner, hopefully. Yeah. And, you know, that's what keeps us going, doesn't it, this year? It's already been a hard year, but trying to stay positive going forward, I think, is the way to be.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. And I think we should probably crack on with our show today. We've got Sophia Miles is our guest, and people will know Sophia from her lot of acting work that she's done. She's been in lots of motion pictures and TV stuff, including Doctor Who. But I mean, obviously, she's been in Thunderbirds. She played Lady Penelope in that. She was in the Underworld series with Kate Beckinsale and Michael Sheen. So yeah, she's been in all sorts of big things. And yeah, it was a very powerful conversation we had with Sophia, wasn't it? Very, very raw in moments. I think we were sort of struck a nerve with all of us during it, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think it's up there with David Harewood, I think, for the most sort of powerful conversation that we've had on this podcast. The only other time I've got emotional as well, and I got very emotional through this. Some of the things that Sophia was talking about really sort of hit a nerve with me. And I suspect they probably will with a lot of our listeners. She's you know, an incredibly talented actor and has got such a sort of body of work, but also a very thoughtful person. And she's really open and honest in this conversation. You know, we really appreciate her doing that, because these podcasts are nothing if they're not for our guests coming on and sort of talking their truth, you know, and talking openly to us. So that was great. And she's a wonderful person as well, you know, clearly very caring and thoughtful, and just really opens up and says a lot of truths on this episode. So I think there'll be a lot of people that will really, really benefit from listening to this. And yeah, it was an honour really to chat to her.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you and I and Sophia found, you know, got a lot out of it at the time as well. You know, the three of us talking and, you know, talking about the difficult moments that we've all been having in the past and more recently. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the reasons we're going to dive into this podcast quite quickly because we want to keep that momentum going and for people to be able to hear it and hear the, you know, like I say, the stark honesty there, I think is really important.
I totally agree. Well, I think we should just go into it. So this is Sophia Miles on The Blank Podcast.
Because you grew up in London. Are you from Notting Hill? Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah. I grew up in Notting Hill because my dad was a vicar and his parish at the time when I was born was in Notting Hill, Notting Hill Gate. So that's where we were when I was born.
So were you made to go to church every Sunday?
Yeah. I fucking hated it. but I did, I sort of went and I started rebelling quite young, probably around, well, as soon as I could, really, I started to kind of wangle my way out of it. Definitely by the time I was a teenager, I wasn't having any of it at all.
Much
at
the same, I was sort of forced to go to church every Sunday.
Yeah, and we were supposed to get confirmed. Is it? That's what, because you get baptized, basically.
I had
to get confirmed because obviously I was like the child of a vicar.
Yeah.
But I refused to go to any of the classes, the confirmation classes. I just like said no, no, and I just said, well, I'll show up on the day for the ceremony or whatever it is, but I'm not going to any of the classes. So Yeah.
I had to go to those classes.
Did you? What were they like?
They were a ball ache because they were in the evening. I didn't want to go to the classes. I wanted to sit at home and watch TV. It was so like kind of dour and like it, more that kind of fire and brimstone stuff, which I wanted to hear about the more positive aspects of being a Christian, not the kind of like you're going to go to hell kind of stuff, which it seemed to be more of that stuff. If you don't get confirmed, all this bad stuff will happen to you. So yeah, I didn't really like it very much. And I did have to go through the confirmation ceremony. They put oil on your head or something, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, anyway. So yeah, then obviously then you're in the circle of trust.
I was so naughty. So when I was about eight, I figured out that in the vestry there was the wine and the wafers, and those wafers always look like super appealing, you know? Yeah. And so I remember like saying to my dad, can I help you can I be in the service with you? Because I knew that if I got dressed up in the white robes and was part of the ceremony in some way or whatever the service, then I'd have access to the vestry and I could get my hands on the wafers. and so I did for a while. I was a server with him, and at the beginning of the service, I'd go out holding a candle or something, and then
An acolyte.
Yeah,
that's what it used to be called, isn't it?
Yeah, and then go back in and kind of horse down the stuff wafers into my mouth, and then they had the wine was in a box, the sort of boxes of wine, wasn't it?
Yes,
with a sort of tap on it, and then at about 8 years old, start to get my head under the tap of wine and start to get pissed. Wow. Yeah.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Wow.
I know. And that's where all my troubles started.
In the vestry,
yeah.
It's funny, I do remember those wafers. I remember them being very dry and
they stick to the roof of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was, and then very claggy. And then obviously you wash it down with some wine. Yeah, it's a weird thing, really, isn't it? Because you're just sort of allowing very small children to quaff wine and stuff. It seems, and it's fine.
So did you both get confirmation names? Because I got confirmed as well, because my dad brought us up Catholic, and I got a confirmation name. Did you guys get them?
No.
No?
What was your confirmation name then?
Oh God, it's really embarrassing. Go on. It's not embarrassing, it's just typical Jim.
Is it quite biblical? Flamboyant.
Sort of. I guess not. It's Santiago. I could have just picked Peter,
what?
Or Paul.
Santiago.
I chose, it's so embarrassing. It's because when I was younger, we lived in Spain because of my dad's job. And so we'd only just come back from Spain. So it's like a little nod to Spain. And Santiago is St. James in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
So I thought I was being really clever, but yeah.
Did Santiago. You choose it for yourself then? Oh, you chose
from
it?
From memory, I think so.
Oh, right. Okay. Good choice, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
You should never be known as Santiago from now on.
Santiago.
I just don't think I'm a Santiago, if I'm being honest.
It doesn't go with your surname, does it, either? Santiago Daily.
Santiago Daily, yeah. No, it doesn't. No.
Maybe that's a Catholic thing. We didn't get I didn't get a confirmation name, yeah.
Get a name, no.
I wouldn't have chosen anything like that though.
What would you have chosen?
I don't know, it would have been something really boring, probably, like Simon, or it would be like choose one of the apostles' names. Like Simon, or I don't know. What about you?
I don't know.
Is there a name you'd ever kind of considered? What about any of your characters? Is there any characters' names that you've liked having? It's probably a slightly weird question, but
do you know, I've suddenly got to an age now where I can't remember the names of some of the characters I've played. It's really bad. No, can't remember.
No.
No.
So
I can't believe I'm the only one who got a name.
Oh no, we got gypped. So, what was school like? What were school days like? Because obviously you went to, is it Fox Primary School?
Fox Primary School was great. That was boys and girls primary school, which is amazing. And I had a wonderful class of friends. We were all great friends in that class, loved each other, amazing memories. And then when we moved for secondary school, we relocated from central London, we moved to Isleworth, and I went to a secondary school down there, which was an all-girls school, which I do not have fond memories of. I was very badly bullied down there, and I didn't enjoy that at all. So secondary school wasn't great. But the only good part of secondary school was drama. And the drama classes and the drama teacher, like, that was the highlight. That was the beacon of light for me, was doing drama. The rest of it was horrible.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the first kind of, were you doing like school plays? Was that the first in with the drama?
Well, I mean, it wasn't really much of it though. It was just, we did GCSE drama, and part of the exam was that we had to put on a play. So we did Teachers by John Godber, and then we showed it to, you know, parents and, you know, general public were allowed to come and see it. It was on for two nights. And on one of the nights, Julian Fellows and his wife Emma came to see it, because Julian at the time was looking for a girl to play Lady Jane Grey in an adaptation of The Prince and the Pauper that he'd written for the BBC. And and he saw me in the play and thought I was all right, and then asked me to come and audition at Television Centre, and I got the job. And that's sort of where it all started for me. And the minute that I knew what it felt like to be on a film set, I didn't want to be anywhere else.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because that kind of idea of being spotted as well, it's not one that you kind of hear that often, really, because, you know, often it's like, you know, you're and I'm sure you know subsequently you've had to do lots of auditions and all that kind of stuff, but that idea of getting spotted is quite magical in a way. It's a kind of, you know, fairy tale.
Yeah, well, it certainly it gives me the confidence that it's meant to be, you know. And I've always ploughed on as hard as parts of the journey of my career have been, with, you know, unemployment and rejection. It's always, you know, the fact that that's where it started has always given me the confidence to think, no, hang on a minute, you know, it's, you were chosen, like, keep going, you know.
Yeah, well, we're all sort of in the creative industry looking for that validation, aren't we, from sort of people that what we're doing is the right thing, and that, but it's always there. If you look back over what you've done, those signs are there that you are on the right path and you're doing the right thing, and people believe in you even if you don't believe in yourself as much as they do sometimes. Like, it's always important wherever you are on your journey to look back, and there will be signs that you have been validated and you are making the right choices and you are doing it. But it can be hard to do that sometimes if work isn't coming or you're going through a dry patch or whatever. It's really difficult to get bogged down in that. But
I think the thing is, though, is that because the product that you're selling is constantly changing, you know, I am selling myself, my physicality, my energy, my persona, you know, me. Now, I, Sophia, for example, I am not the same person, you know, physically or emotionally or spiritually that I was 10 years ago. I'm not. I've changed. So, yes, the person that got cast 10 years ago was validated, but sometimes if I'm not getting a job now, you know, I'm insecure about that, because I'm, you know, the product that I'm selling now is very different. So, you know, I kind of, now I want to get a nice big job. You know, I'm 40 now and I want a big kind of stonking hit where I could be my 40-year-old self and get validated for that. You know, it's tough. It is a, you know, very, very tough profession. And the thing is that it's awful. When it's awful, it's horrendous. I mean, the darkness in this business, it's indescribable. But when it's good, there's nothing else like it, you know.
It does. I mean, listeners will know I've only just started doing castings for bits and bobs here and there. Like, I'm very, 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 very new to it. But it seems to be the sort of industry that there's not a lot of aftercare, or in fact, any care at all. If you don't, there's no one checking in on you if you're not getting a job.
No,
no one checking in on you if you had a bad experience on set with a director or another actor. You're very much left on your own. I mean, most of the time you don't even hear back if you've got a job or get feedback or get notes or anything. It could be a really lonely industry.
I think what a lot of people don't know, you know, we're living now in the age of the self-tape. So when I started, my agent would call me, send me a script in the post, and a meeting would be arranged with the director a couple of weeks later. So you'd have 2 weeks to read the script and prepare, and then you'd go in and you'd read for the director, and then, you know, the director would respond to what you'd done and say, well, that was very good, or that wasn't great, can you do it this way or that way? And there'd be an interaction, and you'd get to discuss the script and, you know, be challenged and all of that stuff. Now, everything is done via self-tape, where you are sent sometimes 9 pages of dense dialogue with a deadline that's sort of 2 days later, saying, can you learn all of this, put yourself on tape, and you send it off into the ether, you know, if it's a no, they don't even call you back to say no. And so there is so much unpaid work, you know, that goes on with this business. And I think it's fucking rude. And I hate it. And I fucking hate it. And I don't mean to swear, but the way that it's changed, I think it's disgusting. I think it's disgusting the way that there is no, like you said, what did you say? That there's no aftercare. It's rude. It's so rude. But there we are. That's the way it is. And whatever. Fuck them.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And obviously, I'm very green to it. But it is a weird industry where you're expected just to sort of crack on, you know, stiff upper lip and all that and crack on. But I've met some really lovely people through it, actually, other performers and stuff. And there's definitely sort of support groups. You're there most of the time texting each other saying, how was that audition? It was fucking terrible. You know, how was that director? He was a nightmare. But it is just a weird industry. I think comedy can be similar as well sometimes. I understand that there are producers and promoters and they've all got a lot to do and they've got stuff to put on and they're busy and stuff. But I think sometimes the talent, as it were, in inverted commas, is almost sort of treated like just a bit of a commodity sometimes. Oh, we'll get so-and-so in, or we'll get so-and-so else in, but they don't really think or care about who they're dealing with, and it's you're basically sort of a bit of a number sometimes. And it can be frustrating, and I think people miss underestimate how much that can affect performers' mental health. Performers are people that are on the edge of their emotions anyway, because that's how you're good at performing. That's what a good performer is. You're on the edge of your emotions and you're ready to delve into those.
Yeah.
And then they're just sort of cast aside after auditions or not called back, or you have a tough gig and you're just left to drive back to London for 3 or 4 hours with your thoughts.
Yeah.
It's a weird industry. It really, really is. And, I'm only learning that now. But yeah, it can be difficult. But on the flip side, there are some brilliant people in there. You know, one of my best mates, Dave, is an actor and a comedian, and he's just the best person I know.
Yeah.
And there are people in there that you can lean on and that get it,
yeah,
that understand what you're going through, and they know. All I've got to do is text Dave and say, "Died on my ass," and he'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
But say what again?
Died on my ass.
Yeah, yeah.
If I've had a bad gig.
Yeah.
Although gigs these days, as you say, you know, your casting's now all self-tape. Gigs are all Zoom gigs now.
I know.
They're awful.
Yeah.
No interaction, no audience. They're a nightmare. Hard, so. Sorry, I've taken over this with a bit of a rant.
It's all right. But,
yeah, it is weird times.
It does make me furious. It makes me furious because often the casting people, they'll send them on a Friday, like, Friday night. You'll get 5 o'clock saying, here's the audition. Can we have it by lunchtime on Monday? And you think, for fuck's sake, we have families. You're just going to expect us to work all over the weekend. And it's just, and the thing is that if you, especially as an actress or whatever, I know they say, is it actor, actress? I don't know. Oh, fuck it. But, you know, if you speak up and say, look, that's ridiculous, how dare you, then the first thing they'll shoot to, they'll say, oh, she's difficult. You know, she's difficult. And it's just like, well, I don't know. It's just, I just think it's so disrespectful and it's so thoughtless. And I can see why, you know, some of these older actresses sort of turn into these rather sort of bitter old dames that shout at people all the time and just, you know, just speak their minds and don't give a fuck, you know.
Yeah.
I think I'll become one of those eventually. I'll be one of these really scary, scary, terrifying, powerful old women, you know.
Yeah, and it turns out they're not scary at all. They're just tired.
Yeah.
Of the bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that. There was a thing going around Twitter. So my wife's an actor and she's obviously connects with a lot of people on Twitter and stuff. And there was one thing going around, I think either from an actor or a casting director or something, saying, stop obsessing over actors learning lines for auditions. Let them read off the script.
Yeah, because please.
An audition isn't about learning the lines. It's about seeing them on screen or feeling their energy. They can learn lines if they get the part.
Yeah.
Like, stop obsessing over that. It's another thing for actors to do. Obviously, as you say, with sometimes like a day's preparation as well. It's sorry, it is. I totally agree with you. It's mad. It's totally mad.
Yeah.
Sorry, Giles.
No, but honestly, if you were to get any actor like together to have that, we should have. I mean, we should boycott it. We should get all actors together to kind of protest and try and change it. But I don't know. It's just it's the way it's become. It's the way it's become. And then, you know, because I'm one of, you know, I've been doing this for, 25 or 26 years. You know, I'm a kind of, you know, been in it a long time. So for me, it's, you know, I'm kind of speaking like a sort of old person. Oh, it's not like it used to be, you know, but it's not. And it doesn't feel right. It's not fair the way that it's working now. But there we go. It is what it is. So,
well, it's something we talked about with another actor, Dan Chute, who was on one of our early podcasts. And he said it's the being ignored was the most painful part. I don't mind the rejection. Actually, it's the being ignored that's worse. And I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
Now, am I right in thinking that you were going to do philosophy at university?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cambridge, yeah. Yeah.
So was there another path you were thinking about going down? Or was acting always going to be the thing you just...
No. I mean, I didn't really know, because the acting thing only came up once, you know, I'd been spotted by Julian and, you know, had a taste of what it was like to sort of work on a film set. But no, I didn't really have any idea of what I was going to do. I mean, the truth is, the only reason I applied for philosophy was that it was the only, it said in the handbook, in the Cambridge book, no prior knowledge of the course required.
Oh, right.
So I thought it meant that I didn't have to do any, you know, preparation and I could just go into the interview, you know, unprepared.
Yeah.
Which I did. And, I wing a lot of my things. I'm quite bad. I like with work. I often, you know, only learn my bits of the script, and you know, I wing things a lot. I'm naughty like that, but yeah.
Can I actually interject there and say I consider myself a very similar person who wing things.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, I'm a major like. A major winger, like
I would say,
major winger. Like,
well, I think a lot of our listeners listening will probably say the same.
But you'd be horrified if I was to tell you like winging. Quite the, I mean, the level to which I've winged things. I mean, I've watched my films, and when I've seen myself say a line, I've gone, "Oh, that's why I had to say that." because I only ever read my bits. I say my bits and kind of on the day just sort of energetically respond in a way that I think works. Have no idea what I'm talking about. No idea. At all. Terrible.
Well, in a way, there's an argument probably that that keeps you sort of fresh and, you know, because I imagine sometimes you can get bogged down in the script and stuff.
Well, my philosophy about it is that, well, my character wouldn't know what's going on. She wouldn't know what's happening when, she, you know, in the other parts of the story. So I don't know. Anyway, no. Tell me about how much you wing things.
Well, firstly, I think winging it is a superpower. Personally, yeah. And I think winging it should be embraced. And I think if you consider yourself someone who wings it, I think that is an incredibly important life skill. And I think most things I've done have been, or most positions I've got into where I consider them to be, oh, it's a good opportunity, it's probably through winging. I mean, I got my first ever job in journalism with a complete lie on my CV because, so I did journalism at uni and got a 2-2, a pretty solid 2-2.
There's nothing wrong with that, mate.
Didn't do much. Nothing wrong with that, but I didn't do much work. My dissertation was on Trevor MacDonald, and I still don't know why. I think I like Trevor MacDonald. I think he's quite cool. I did no work. Anyway, when I qualified, my course leader, who was a guy called Gary Edwards, this comes up on the pod quite a lot. There's nearly always a teacher somewhere who has had an impact. Gary Edwards, spelt with two R's. I've never seen it before or since, spelt with two R's. Gary Edwards. And I nearly got chucked off the course in my first year because I plagiarised something really badly. I didn't know what I was doing, and he sort of let me off. And he wrote me a sort of a reference that you'd then try and take to papers to get a job and stuff. And he put, oh, James was a hardworking student, and he qualified with a solid 2-1. And I had to sort of double check. I'm like, he's got that right. Definitely got a 2-2. He's obviously done a typo. But I just thought, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to say 2-1. I've got this reference from Gary. You know, so it holds weight.
Gary with 2 R's, yeah.
Gary with 2 R's. And that's how I got my first job on the Uckfield Courier back in 2007. And it's never been checked since.
I mean,
I did the job. And I did the job. I wasn't brilliant. I mean, I closed the Uckfield Courier because of low circulation, but that's another story. But I did okay. You know, and I'm here now doing something completely different, but I survived and I cracked on. I just sort of went with it. And I just think if you sort of go with it sometimes, it normally sort of works out.
Well, I mean, you can probably tell by my interview style that I'm winging this every episode. I totally agree with you, Jim. I think there's something to be said for winging it. And in some ways, I guess it does keep you on your toes a little bit.
Yeah. It gives you an adrenaline rush. I think winging is like, yeah, I do it. I think, yeah, I wing it because it gives me a rush.
Yeah.
No.
I agree. And also, if you think you're winging it, or you know you're winging it, whoever you're talking to or dealing with at the time, I bet they're thinking similar. I bet everyone's thinking. Because that's the thing about winging it is you think, or I certainly do, when I'm sort of flying by the seat of my pants, I think, well, that person knows what they're doing. That person's an expert. That person's smashing it right now.
Mm.
And I bet they're all thinking similar varieties of I'm winging it as well. Mm. Which in a way is a bit of a comfort, actually, to know that even these... I follow someone on Twitter who's a sort of TV writer, and she's absolutely brilliant, very funny. And she tweeted yesterday, I won't say her name, but she tweeted yesterday saying, I'm having a really bad day where I just feel like nothing's working for me and I'm sort of a vibe of I'm totally winging it and everything's falling apart. And I'm thinking, but to me, you're completely smashing it. You are completely smashing it. You're exactly where I want to be. Mm. You're getting the credits I want to get. Like, you're really funny. You seem like such a nice person. And I just think it's all perspective. It's all just... We're all so much more like each other in these kind of moments and the way we deal with things than I think we realise sometimes. And that is a comfort. But yeah, anyway, to winging it.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no nothing.
It is a superpower. It is a superpower, and that is a hill that I'm willing to die on.
Yeah.
So far, you're... It might sound like a bit of a... I don't want to sort of sound like actory by saying your process. Obviously, we've talked about winging it, but do you have much of a... What's your process when you're going through a filming, like when you're going through being on set? Do you have a process, or is it just literally just rocking up, doing your bits?
It's here's how I wing it, right? What I do is that I make sure that I know my lines before I get to the set. So I know what I have to say and when I have to say it. But I don't go into a scene with a kind of preconceived idea or having made a decision of how I am going to say the lines energetically, how I'm going to play the character in that moment. I wait. When I get there, I then kind of energetically will feel, you know, feed off the other actors, see how it feels, whatever space that we're in, you know, and kind of go with the flow of whatever's going on naturally within the real moment of wherever we are. And just kind of try and, I don't know. I mean, it's weird. I have no process really. I just, to me, the acting bit, like doing that stuff in front of the camera is the most natural thing in the world to me. Like it's the easiest thing that I do in my life. Like I think for some people, like, you know, they go through all these like methods and they go to acting school and all of that. But for me, it's like as simple as like, you know, going and having a wee. I mean, it's like, I don't know.
What an analogy.
That's your acting masterclass. It's just like having a wee.
Well, I guess you know, that's when you know it, when it feels that natural and normal. That's when you know you're doing the right thing. You know, if the thing that you do that millions of other people think, oh, I could never do that, that would be terrifying, seems like second nature to you, then you know you're in the right business.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I can't control it. You know, it's like a bodily function that happens. Like you know, it's not, I don't make a decision to do it. It just comes out.
Yeah, much like weeing. I mean, again, you are describing weeing, let's be honest. No difference.
Yeah, I couldn't teach it either.
No.
No, I couldn't. And people have asked me, oh, can you teach, you know, my son or my daughter to act? And I honestly couldn't teach it.
No. Did you feel it straight away though? Because I know you obviously did that project with Julian Fellowes. Was that did it feel comfortable when you first walked out into that environment?
I remember being hang on, God, it's taking me back now. It was a bit like, I mean, I'd never jumped out of an aeroplane, but I was very, very nervous. And the moment before the leap, my heart was pounding and all of that stuff. But as soon as it started, there was this just enormous sense of peace and freedom and kind of, I don't know, yeah. And then that's never left me, really. And I can instantly, you know, no matter how stressful my life is or whatever's going on at home or what have you, like when I'm on my way to a film set, I just relax. And I'm so excited always to go to work. Like I just, and it's never been work for me. I mean, the fact that they give me money as well to do it is just, you know, ridiculous. You know, I just can't believe that. And it isn't work for me. You know, it's not. Yeah. And it's actually, the problem is that it's essential that I do it, because if I'm not creative, then mentally I am in trouble, like real trouble. I suffer from very, very bad depression. I have done since as long as I can remember, really. My dad had it. It's genetic. And the work is the only medicine that really, really works. I'm guaranteed that when I'm working, I'm completely free of any kind of mental illness. But when, you know, when I'm not creative, that's when I can get into trouble.
When you're having periods where work isn't coming in, do you have anything else that you do to stay creative?
Well, this is the problem, you know, I've been having recently, because I'm so desperately trying to, you know, find that other thing. I did start writing with Rufus Hound last summer. We were kind of mucking around writing a short film, which then ended up being too long, but not long enough to be a feature. So we sort of abandoned it. But I did, I mean, when we were doing that, I found that brilliant. And when I was writing, you know, that did take me out. That gave me the same feeling of peace and calm and taking my, you know, focusing my mind and taking me out of, you know, my kind of negative thinking and all of that. But I struggle to find anything. And that's a big problem. I mean, watching trashy reality television works, but, you know, I don't think keeping up with the Kardashians is...
I was going to say, what's your go-to show?
Well, is that the go-to program?
Well, yeah. yeah, and I, you know, it's tragic, but I was actually really sad when I found out it had been cancelled. No, finishing it. No, but that's the thing, is that reality TV does take me out of my head, but that's just crap. You know, I can't, that's not good for my, that's not going to, you know, help me evolve, or doesn't give me anything kind of, you know, feed.
But you know it's crap. And I think, like, you do sometimes have to give yourself those moments where it is okay to sit and watch rubbish. Like, we can't.
So, like, creative, it's okay to eat a burger and chips sometimes, isn't it? I suppose it's the same. You know.
Yeah, I just think your brain whirs away so much sometimes. It's especially if you're looking for something creative to take it away from even more whirring. It's very tiring. It's really tiring to be constantly performing at that.
Struggle. I mean, in my 20s, you know, the truth is that I used to, you know, I drank a lot. I don't drink now. You know, I drank. And I smoked a load of weed. And that's sort of what I'd do when I wasn't working. And, you know, that would, you know, obviously sort of, you know, change my mindset. But that's not, you know, in the long term, you know, well, in the short term, it's not good for you either. But, you know, I don't do that now. But I do struggle sort of in, you know, in sobriety, kind of knowing quite what to do. I mean, do you have any suggestions?
I've started seeing my counsellor again. I saw her quite regularly a couple of years ago when I had a bit of a tough time. And then I've started seeing her again during lockdown just to sort of check in, because lockdown has been so mad. And it came up that, weirdly, we've been tapping into a lot of things that I've kind of forgotten as a kid. And we tapped into one that I realised I was a very creative, artistic kid who liked making art and painting and creating things. And I'd sort of forgotten that. And actually, painting is a very peaceful thing for me. And I realized a couple of years ago I did a painting for my mum for her birthday, and I just sort of tapped into that and realized how incredibly at peace. It's funny you said at peace earlier. It's exactly how I feel when I'm doing that. So I haven't yet, because I only spoke to her the other day, but I'm going to try and get back into trying to do some painting. It, not for anyone, not to sell, not to give to anyone, just for me. And if it's rubbish and I throw it away, I throw it away. If I keep it in a drawer, I keep it in a drawer. And I think that is something that, for me, will tap into the creativeness of my brain, but also sort of relax things a bit and calm things down. So I don't know if that's something to try.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But everyone's different.
Finding an outlet of some way. And I think, obviously, creativity is a great way of being able to express yourself. I play in a band in normal times, and just picking up the guitar and playing that and working stuff out is a good way for me to sort of, you know, and thinking about, obviously, writing stuff down and expressing my thoughts and stuff in that way is always been something that I've lent on when I've been in difficult times. And the last few months have been very difficult for me as well, finding it challenging, sort of, you know, the juggle and the struggle, I've sort of been saying to people. But
I sort of feel like, for me, like, there's two different people at play. Like, when I'm at work, you know, I really respect the person that I am. And I think, you know, she's cool, that, you know, she's a cool chick, you know, she's clever and, you know, nice person and talented and, you know, all that stuff. But I actually, you know, in truth, like, I, you know, I was thinking, you realised yesterday, I don't really like who I am when I'm not working. Like, I don't actually... They bash on about, you know, you've got to love yourself and all, you know, and I'm very unkind to myself. Like, I don't actually like who I am when I'm not working. I don't really know. I feel like I'm just nothing when I'm not working. Like, I don't know what. I don't know. I just, which isn't a good thing, you know. Mm. I shouldn't feel like that. And I know, you know, because lots of other people will tell me, you know, to the contrary, but I don't have a good relationship with myself when I'm not working. Mm. And I'd like to change that. But it's, I mean, I think a lot of people struggle with that. And I think a lot of humans struggle with low sense of self-esteem and they don't admit it openly. But, you know, I do massively, and I always have done. And no matter sort of what I've achieved, it's still never really gone away. And I don't know whether it will or not, you know, and whether, you know, I'm 40 now and I sort of think, well, am I going to, you know, live the next half of my life kind of criticizing myself in my head and putting myself down and, you know, struggling with the depression? Or am I going to find a way to crack through this and kind of, you know, turn it on its head? I don't know. I don't know. I'd like to, but it's really hard. Really hard. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I think it's really important that you do talk about it, because there'll be so many people, if not everyone, out there that can relate to that in some way.
Yeah.
I think it
is. Do you
think
so?
100%.
I feel like a bit of, I feel like really kind of vulnerable and a bit freakish sort of saying that. Like, I just, makes me feel really weird. But do you think so?
Well, I'm already, as you're talking it, I'm already thinking that you could be talking about me talking about myself. I can 100% relate to it. And I know from some of the messages we get from listeners that tweet us and email us that other people do feel the same as well. But you're absolutely right that you can't really switch it off. It's really, really difficult. And you say things to yourself that you would never say to anyone else, ever, any other person. And yet you're saying it to yourself. It is incredibly difficult to stop doing it. And it's incredibly difficult. It's like an out-of-body experience sometimes. It's difficult where you know you're doing it, and I can't stop. I know that I'm being really hard on myself. And so why don't I stop it? It's like someone else next to me going, tapping me on the shoulder, Jim, what are you doing? But it is really, really hard to stop it.
And for me, it doesn't make any difference, sadly. Like, no matter how many times or how many people tell me, you know, you are lovely or you are talented or you are whatever, I kind of in my head, I go, yeah, well, you think that, but I'm actually a fucking cunt, you know. Sorry, I shouldn't have used that word, but you know, that's how I feel. It's like, I think, yeah, well, I'm glad you think that, but you know, nice, that's nice for you, but it's not how I feel. And it does, their opinion of me does not change my opinion of me, you know. And I, oh man,
I totally get it. Even if it comes from someone that you massively respect, so my wife is an incredible person, and I mean, she's my best friend and the best person I've ever met. And she's so supportive of me, of everything I do, everything. And yet even a part of me is like, well, you have to say that.
Yeah, you're married to me. Yeah.
And yet if she said that about someone else, she said, oh, that person is really kind and funny and talented.
You believe her?
Cool.
Yeah.
They must be. And yet, why can't we inwardly take that in? I don't know. A part of it does actually sort of fascinate me from a sort of like psychological point of view as to why we do this, but as someone that does it as well, it's incredibly frustrating. I find myself 99% of the time just being very frustrated at myself and at the world and at the industry I'm in, everything. I feel very... And I know that anger is my sort of go-to emotion sometimes, and that is something I'm working on. But I find life really, really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I find life really hard. Really hard. I always have done. But then, you know, when you get the beautiful bits of it, like when I, you know, for me, you see that it's the work and the creative moments of pure bliss that make it all worthwhile. And then when those moments happen, you go, oh, I see, that's why I'm here. You know, that's what it's all about, you know. And then if that's what makes you want to carry on and stay and keep on, you know, ploughing through and working through it. But I have also found that through, you know, going through periods of incredible darkness, as horrific as they have been, And believe me, like, they've I've, you know, gone through some really, really dark times. Each time I've gone through them, you know, when I've broken out of that, I've found that I've evolved and become a lot stronger because of it. And it those periods have then helped me evolve into something greater. And they've also then helped me be able to help other people who might be struggling with, you know, same sort of issues and things. And but yeah
but we do evolve. I think that's a very, very powerful thing you just said.
Mm.
We do evolve.
Yeah.
I think that's actually, I'm getting quite emotional. I think that's actually, I think that's actually our greatest strength as humans. Mm. That we evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's all right.
Charles, you go. I've got nothing to say.
You're right, mate.
Just suffice tapping into something that sort of means a lot to me today, and in current
climate.
Yeah, it's just but then this is the beauty of this podcast we do, is because we tap into things that mean a lot to us. And if we react like this in the way that I am now, it's because this stuff means a lot to me. I care about it. And that's why I like doing this podcast, because we meet like-minded people who feel the sort of same way as us and think the same way and care about these things in the same way that we do. So, yeah, it means a lot to me. I've made this podcast episode a lot about myself. I'm so sorry.
I really
feel like I've derailed this episode.
Not at all. And this is the power of conversation, you know, when you converse with one another and you're able to sort of express yourself in that way through conversation, I think.
I don't know about you guys, but I found that this period of this lockdown thing is sort of, it's making it, it really seems to be sort of cracking me open, like, to the point where it's much harder to hide or to kind of keep any kind of you know, I'm shit at kind of wearing armor anyway. It's weird, like, I'm good at acting when I'm acting, but in real life, like, I can't pretend. If I'm unhappy, it shows all over my face. But at the moment, I feel like the vulnerable side of me, you know, through this lockdown, like the sort of the everything is coming to the surface, and I think in a way, though, it's important. Like, it's kind of a relief to start to make connections with the real sort of authentic side of people, because, you know, so often sort of we meet and, you know, hey, how are you doing, and yeah, I'm good, and oh, what do you do for a living, and you talk about all of this stuff, but that's not really
surface stuff, isn't it?
It's not the interesting stuff, really, and it doesn't help sort of, especially, maybe I'm not making any sense.
I think you're right, especially at the moment. I think at the moment, I mean, everyone's having very difficult but different and relative experiences of lockdown, and I think yes, this is the time actually to be more honest with everyone than ever, I think.
Yeah.
Because everyone's having a shit time. And it's okay to admit that and talk about it, because you'll find someone else that's having a similar time who can relate. I think we can all relate to each other way more at the moment than maybe we ever did before. And I just think now's the time to do it. Yeah.
I need to sort my life out, because because I've come to realise, you know, I can't live the next half of my life the way that I've lived the first half. Like, I have to change the way I think, because it's all in my head, you know, it's, you know, I've gone through life, I've kind of ticked all the boxes of the things that I thought I needed to make me happy, you know, oh, well, I'll be happy when I have, you know, a film career, a dog, a partner, a kid, a house in the country, all of that. And you guess all of that stuff and you still feel wrong or uncomfortable in yourself. And I know that there's nothing external that will make me feel good about myself. And it's just going to be a question of changing the way that I think and talk to myself in my head. I think it's that simple. But cognitively, because it's been wired, you know, in such a way for so long, you know, in a negative function, you know, literally from the minute I wake up, it's like, you know, oh, morning, you idiot, you know, look in the mirror. Oh, look, you're getting older, you know. I just going to have to sort of catch myself, really. And I don't know.
But isn't there a... Isn't there a beauty in the knowledge that it can be done? You know, we've evolved this far. You've evolved so far through your life, talking about those dark moments and then coming out of them and being stronger, which is a word that you used. That makes me think that when you do think, I want to change, I want to change the way I talk about myself and think about myself, I can do it. It can be done. Because I've come through these moments before and I've evolved already, so I can evolve again. That is something that sort of keeps me going, that makes me think, because it's really easy to think bleakly and think, well, what is the fucking point? But actually, but you can, but like, if you're thinking logically, then that's the illogical part of your brain taking over. But if you let the logical one to kick in and think, well, I've done it before and other people have done it, so I can do it. I think that's important sometimes, to remind yourself that you can do these things, you can evolve. I just love that word evolve today. I just think it's so, I just think it's so perfect.
Yeah.
And it can be done. And sometimes that's all you need to think of that day. And you don't even need to do it that day or start changing. But that's your thought for the day. I can do it. And I will. And sometimes that's enough for me. And then the madness of life kicks in again, because it's chaos at the moment. It's complete chaos. But it is doable. And I think there's a beauty in that for me, in the knowledge. Yeah. And that is irrefutable fact. It can be done.
I think it's also trying to remember as well, like, you know, I often sort of think that everyone else has got it together and that I'm the only one pretty much that's, you know, mental. But in fact, you know, when you do actually, you know, speak to, you realise every single person is struggling with something, aren't they? Really?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's a shame people didn't talk more like this all the time, really.
Yeah.
Then we'd all be weeping all over the world.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, Giles and I talk about this a lot on and off the podcast, and we talk a lot about the podcast off air, that this is the beauty of doing this particular pod and this series we've done of these. Over 100 episodes now, is that we are talking honestly, and people come on and they do talk very honestly and candidly. And there's never ever a bad moment, or there's never ever a reason for someone not to do it. It's always positive. Every single episode we have and every single conversation is a step forward because of people's honesty and openness and the way we're talking now on this episode. It's never a bad thing. And that's one of the beauties of podcasts. It's one of the best things I love about doing this podcast as well. So yeah, you know, there are, life is shit sometimes, but there is a lot of positivity and beauty in it. And sometimes it's just recognizing that, and as you say, and it's relative.
With my I had this thought recently, like, with my depression, because I mean, I have it hardcore, man, like hardcore, like it's put me in bed for 9 months straight at points. Wow. You know, between jobs, I mean, it's unbelievable. But I've, you know, had the thought recently, because I had a really bad bout of it recently, and I thought, you know, if I wouldn't mind I don't mind suffering it if ultimately there's a reason for it. Like if I have to suffer it because it's going to save somebody's life, or it's for a purpose, like that. Do you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
then I'll go, I'll happily go, I will go through it. I'll feel the pain. You know, I'm a warrior, like I'm a strong woman, and I'll do it. But because it feels so sort of fruitless, like it just feels no, I don't understand the reason for it. And I keep sort of saying, you know, universe or God or whatever, you know, why? Like what the fuck is this for, other than just causing me and my family, you know, an enormous amount of pain? You know, what? And that's when that it's it. That's what makes me angry and sad and just feel completely sort of lost and yeah. disheartened and, you know, it makes me lose faith in the world, you know, and in life. But again, I guess, you know, maybe then being able to speak about it now, if someone listening to this can hear, you know, if I'm going to help someone listening to this feel less alone and, you know,
yeah.
then great. But it's... thing is with depression, I think what people don't, a lot of people don't realize is that it isn't just mental, it's physical. Like you literally can't, your whole body shuts down. Like you can't move, like you can't, your energy just goes, you can't get out of bed. I mean, it's just horrendous. And mentally, I mean, it's just awful. And it's, I don't, I used to be ashamed of it or think it was something to be, like if I thought if I had depression that I was a failure, you know, and that I never wanted to use that word or admit that I, you know, had it. I guess, I don't know why. I mean, my dad had it and I grew up with a depressed person in the house. And so I know the impact of it. And I certainly know I'm now worrying about the impact it might have on my son and it's all of that. And it's, you know, it's a big thing. But, you know, but then there's all the others, you know, the myriad of other problems that people have, you know, it's anxiety and,
yeah.
you know, fucking, there's so many things and everyone's got their thing. I mean, what do you, Giles, what's your problem?
It's a good name for a podcast, actually. Yeah. What's your problem?
Yeah, it's almost saying a confrontation. What's your problem?
Yeah, what's your problem?
Well, I mean, I've had depression and I've suffered from anxiety. I've been medicated for anxiety for 20 years.
Yeah,
been on sertraline for a long time. Yeah. So, So anxiety has always been a thing. I know it stems from. Yeah, from loss and grief. I mean, I kind of know where it is from. I suffer from terrible health anxiety is my worst thing. But again, I kind of know where it's from, and that's a comfort because you kind of know where it stems from, and you can kind of react and change the way that you deal with certain situations because you kind of know it's rooted in something. I guess I've put things in place over the years to help me through those moments, whether it be, like I said earlier, finding an outlet or making sure I take myself off and have, you know, solitary times and things like that, or channel the energy into another thing.
Yeah.
That's always helped me. But the big thing that's helped me the most is having those conversations, having conversations like this, hearing other people talk about the things they're going through and the moments that they find challenging. And that's again, like Jim says, that doing this podcast, we've obviously talked to a lot of people that have had similar situations, and it enriches me and how I feel about my own things that I've got, my own stuff, and figuring out how I can continue to evolve, like Jim said, and change the way I think about things and how I can put more things in place to help those around me so that they're not affected by my stuff, which is what I always call it, my stuff.
But doesn't it, when we're talking like this sort of openly and candidly, this is such a stronger connection than if we'd spent an hour talking about acting or whatever. Like when you have these conversations with people, you make such a stronger connection. And we are social beings, and what we want to do, and it's innate in us, is connect to each other. It's what we want, what makes us happy. And it only really takes, it's only really when we're being honest with each other and ourselves that I think you have those proper strong connections. And as you said earlier, like you can have superficial conversations sometimes, or like water cooler conversations, like in the office and stuff, and oh, the weather's great, isn't it, and stuff. But those are nothing, really. Those are pleasantries. It's only when you sort of really open up and talk about how you're feeling, and you realise the other person probably is feeling similar, that you can really make a connection, and that's really powerful for me. That's really almost what keeps me going as a human being, is that those strong connections, because that's, I think that's what we crave. So I guess really is what I'm coming to is thank you both for being so open today, I think, because it's, as Charles says, it's enriched me today, and it's what we want as people. We want to connect, and we can only do that by being honest, I think. So, yeah, so thank you, I guess. It's a thank you message.
Thank you. I feel really like, I mean, I feel the same. It's been lovely to connect with the two of you. I do feel, though, like a bit vulnerable now and naked to sort of, the, you know, this going out into the ether and a bit scared of being judged. But I guess that, again, that's me being honest about, you know, my fears. Maybe I will be judged. Maybe I won't. I don't know.
I mean, to be honest, from the reactions we have from our listeners, you certainly won't be judged from any of our listeners. They are, we seem to have cultivated an incredibly compassionate and kind group of listeners and followers and people that interact with us. I mean, amazing. The threads that I get copied into on Twitter are just sort of filled with love and compassion and helpfulness. It's really nice. There's always a risk, I guess, that when we put ourselves out into the world, we get judged by people, but we're probably being judged by people that, you know, don't matter to us. If I'm if I'm saying something honest and someone's being nasty to me, well, that's an opinion I don't care about.
Yeah.
But if it's someone's being compassionate, or it's someone I care about is replying to me and being nice, well, that's, you know, that enriches me. And unfortunately, in the world and social media, there's a lot of people whose opinion I don't care about that unfortunately I get to see quite a lot. And that's one of the downsides of social media. But there are good people out there. And again, doing this podcast has reminded me that.
My Twitter followers are all lovely. Like my, I don't have any negative experience on Twitter. I don't. I think it's really unusual, because a lot of people have fights on Twitter and loads of bad vibes and stuff. Like I know Rufus Hound is constantly like having fights with people, but my lot are just delightful. All they do is tell everyone. I mean, they're just lovely. Is that not normal?
Well, I'm very lucky, but it should be. Yeah, it should be, shouldn't it? No, I'm really lucky. I have a lovely kind of tribe of people that follow me, and I've made so many wonderful connections. You know, we wouldn't be doing this without Twitter. So, you know, it's lovely, and you know, and I really like watching your videos that you put up. You know, seeing how people are. No, but they're lovely. You know, and I think that's again that people want to connect with other people, don't they, and hear their stories and find out about them, but in a nice way, not in a, you know, not a, not to tittle tattle or to have gripes or have confrontation, but to actually have, you know, proper conversations with people that they inspired by or want to, you know more about. So yeah, I mean, generally speaking, social media's been, or Twitter in particular, has been a lovely place for me to go. Jim works more in the football industry, so he has a bit more tribal.
Yeah.
A bit more tribal, isn't it?
I've actually scaled back my Twitter a little bit recently because it's, yeah, tribal is the exact, is a very good way of describing it. And people do really funny things when they get tribal. But my Instagram, I seem to have some nice followers. And I have a YouTube account that's, it's a comedy football YouTube account. And most of my followers on there are over 100,000, and they're mostly sort of young lads, basically young kids who like.
Are you famous then, Jim? Should I know? Should
I don't think so.
Are you a bit famous?
I don't think so.
Famous, are we?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, you must be though. If you got 100,000, must be a bit famous, no?
I think I would say possibly slightly well known in the football parody world. It's quite the world we all want to be in.
The football parody.
It's the one you want. No, but they are, like you said about your Twitter followers, they're just the nicest kids. And like, I think sometimes people write off younger people as well and think, oh, they don't know what
they're
doing.
They're much more right on.
Honestly, they are. And I get the nicest, on my Instagram account, not often, but now and then I'll post pictures of my daughter or do stories of my daughter. And I just get comments in them saying, you're such a good dad. You seem so nice. Your daughter's really cute. I just think, how lucky am I to have that? I just, that's why I've gravitated a bit away from Twitter and more to Instagram and YouTube, because they're just nice people. And again, it's what we're saying. We want to connect with nice people. It's what makes the world go round. And if you do have those people in your lives, then, you know, we're pretty lucky. Especially if there are people that like the work you do and follow you for that reason. Well, then, you know, it's another great reason, I think, for us to keep doing what we're doing, because there are people out there that appreciate it. Not only do they appreciate it, they tell you nice things about it. So, yeah, there are good people out there.
That seems like a really nice way to end the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
Well, there you go. That was Sophia Miles on The Blank Podcast, an incredibly powerful and raw conversation. And I'm sure there'll be people listening now or during that chat that found certain bits of it really sort of hit home for them, as it did for me. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if people listening have sort of got a bit emotional listening to it, because when you have guests that really sort of bear their emotions, you know, and Giles, we hopefully sort of see ourselves as empathetic people, well then you end up connecting to it, and it affects your emotions as well. And I just think Sophia was brilliant, and I think, you know, when you're going through difficult times, as she is, there's no obligation, especially if you're a well-known person, to talk about it. And you know, you and I are not well-known really at all, but not in terms of, you know, what she is in terms of being famous. And I think there's always a sort of trepidation to talk honestly about stuff, because you don't know what the reaction will be like. No. But so it takes, you know, it takes real guts to do that. And I know that our listenership are incredibly caring and understanding and thoughtful, and I'm sure they will offer her support and love off the back of this, in the same way they have done with every guest that's come on and talked openly. That is one thing I can be absolutely sure of. So yeah, just to, you know, a big thank you to Sophia for coming on and talking like that. It was it's one of those episodes that I definitely will not forget.
No, likewise. Likewise. Yeah, thank you, Sophia. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate your time, and really appreciate your honesty with us. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, look, should we round off this week's episode with a couple of tweets?
I think we should.
You know, we're talking about sort of love and support, and again, our listeners are very supportive in that regard, and our Twitter feed has been going pretty crazy recently, actually. Loads of tweets, loads of people getting involved.
Well, Jim, this is... I can tell you why. I went a bit mad and sort of reposted all our audiograms from all the... Obviously, we're recording this after our 100th episode has gone out, but that was in aid of our 100th episodes. So people were sort of picking up on old episodes, which was really nice. So we did get sort of a deluge of messages, which was lovely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of episodes. It was interesting seeing those go out and be like, oh, I remember that one, and oh yeah, that one. You know, we've covered a lot of ground, haven't we?
I'm still baffled by the whole thing, really.
Well, let's
our book.
I know. We've had a mad journey, haven't we? Really. Which the book, yes, available to pre-order. So please
from
buy
all
that.
The bookshops and Amazon.
Indeed. let's go. Go on. What tweet have you got?
I've got a lovely one here from Valentina Wright. She says, "This is about the Grace Blakely episode that we did." She says, "Amen to this sentiment. Disobedience isn't a sign of belligerence. It's a sign the authority figure is asking for a level of respect they have not yet earned." There's, yeah, some wise words there. But yeah, basically about, I know Grace talked a lot about being difficult, I think she would say, at school, and how, you know, I think she got expelled from her school, actually, didn't she? And she's always sort of challenging authority. So that's it. That's a great little takeaway from that one.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. There's go. I think actually quite sort of salient for current times as well, actually. So yeah, thank you very much for that tweet. I've got one here from Vicky Lott, and she says, "Popped my blank pod cherry." All right, Vicky, calm down. "By listening to the wonderful Stephen Mangan." Oh, he was wonderful. "Brilliant. Had a huge crush since Green Wings days." Me too, Vicky. "And it's not diminished. Great podcast. #" Blank pod. Vicky, thank you very much. And yeah, that was a great episode, and you know, Stephen's a legend.
Oh,
and another one sort of popped out of the picked out of the vaults, really, that episode.
No, but it's like you're saying, like, But you get these messages from people and you think, oh, yeah, shit, we sat in a room with them for an hour and you just forget. And that's a terrible thing to say that you forget, but actually what a lovely thing it is when you are allowed to remember it.
Indeed, absolutely, yeah, lovely memories. We've got a big back catalogue now. So if you are new to the podcast, maybe this is your first one, you know, welcome aboard and thank you. We have a big, over 100 past episodes, so please do delve in and try them out. And if you enjoy them, please do tweet us and let us know. Our Twitter handle is...
at BlackPod.
And we're also on Facebook and Instagram, and it's the exact same.
At BlackPod.
And if you fancy sending us an email, we do have an email. Email almost seems like sort of archaic now, doesn't it?
Yeah, almost like telegrams.
Yeah, send us a telegram. Send us a smoke signal. Yeah, send us a carrier pigeon if you fancy.
Just call out. Just shout.
Shout. Oh yeah, we need like a blank, like a Batman symbol, like a blank symbol.
A
broken pencil up into the.
I'd love that. A Batman, a blank man single.
There we go. Oh, anyway, look, we do accept email. We'd love to have an email.
We accept it. We accept it. We don't. It's not our preferred form.
No, we accept it. We allow you. We will allow you to email us. Our email address is
theblankpodcast2018@gmail.com.
It is indeed, and we'd love to hear from you on any format, really. And we do accept, Telegram.
Not Snapchat, though, because we're not kids.
No, I've never been a Snapchat sort of person.
Can't be bothered with that nonsense. Or TikTok for that.
Are you I do have a TikTok.
Yeah, so I can imagine it's quite useful for you, but no.
Yeah, but
I can't be going down that. That's another thing to post on, mate.
This is the issue. It's too much to do.
It's bad enough doing a couple of tweets enough. Today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. Exhausting. Anyway, people don't need to know about our social media usage. Anyway, listen. Thank you to Sophia for coming on and being just an incredibly inspiring guest this week. Yeah. And I'm sure that we will have feedback from our listeners about the way they've been touched by the words in her episode. So thank you to her. Thank you to our listeners for listening as ever and getting in contact. And thank you, Giles, for just being you.
And you, Jim.
Thanks, man. And we'll see you next week on the Blank Podcast. Goodbye.
Media Podcast.